that's part of the balance. I think, you know, how simple should architecture be to be able to communicate to the public, and how complicated can you, and architecture is complicated, you know. So if you want to have architecture of I think of quality, there needs to be some level of complication or of complex issues. On the other hand, to communicate that to non-architects is a difficult task.
Welcome to Architecture City Planning, the podcast of the Federal Chamber of Architects. This is the 11th episode, today in English, because we look beyond the borders of Germany towards Copenhagen. The successful Danish architect, Dorte Mandrup, has an office there with around 70 employees. The office is located in a backyard in the middle of the city, not far from the main train station. It is an open-plan office in which glass walls separate meeting rooms with flat screens for presentations. There is an open kitchen and a model-making workshop with a 3D printer and all the tools that make a model maker's heart beat faster. I thought, that's what an architectural office has to look like. Many models were on the shelves and created a great atmosphere as little works of art. And what also struck me most was that there was no reception or registration. I just walked in, stood in the middle of the work process among people, and was greeted very nicely by the first person who just came by. And that was special in Copenhagen anyway. The Danes are very warm and have an extremely positive aura. Just the right place to find out what a good city with good spaces should look like in a crisis. And anyway, my name is Kerstin Kunekat, and before we start, I would like to mention that Dorte Mandrup Architekter has just won the competition for the Exile Museum Berlin at Anhalter Bahnhof. We congratulate to it. So let's begin. I started with a quote about her in connection with the AEDES Architecture Forum exhibition Human Nature.
Dorte Mandrup is not interested in designing iconic buildings that stand for themselves, but buildings that communicate with their surroundings, yes, socially and ecologically. This referred to your architecture in nature, I guess,
yes,
like in Greenland and like the project The,
yes,
Whale in Norway. But today we're talking about the city.
Yes.
So architecture is often a status symbol or an object of prestige, mm-hmm, especially for companies. Mm-hmm. It seems to be particularly about standing out and making statements. Do you think that there will be a change in the way we think about architecture as part of the environment rather than as an iconic that stands out from the crowd?
Well, I think that to me, the icons cannot be separated from the context. I think, in a way, the notion of icons standing alone is not interesting. It's pure objects. And I think that what is really interesting is both, you know, creating icons, but icons that are in a dialogue with the surroundings and all their context. So they need to have some kind of contextual relation. And I think that they also have to, I mean, the most banal thing to say is to say that they have to give something back to the neighborhood or to the context, the landscape or whatever, but at least they have to give something back. I think the notion of the object standing alone is not really interesting.
I think it's somehow in the human nature as well to have this competition, higher, faster, bigger, greater. Do we think we need that?
Right now, it seems to be a demand that architecture needs to somehow be relating to the neighborhood. The year of 2000, 2010, everybody was very interested in the icon, the standalone icon, and probably also in the surprising and in thinking, you know, why not? Let's do this. You know, this kind of, in a way, very also maybe a little immature way of looking at the urban context, I think, because since architecture is obviously standing for a long time, it has to relate over time to the texture of the city. But there's been a great interest in this these kind of wow objects, and I think that's kind of doesn't seem to be so interesting anymore.
Yeah, the times are changing.
Yes.
even, I mean, it's maybe we can compare it to the big cars.
Yes.
Like somehow the SUVs just have been yes. the greatest thing, and now you are kind of from yesterday, if you still need to drive.
It's becoming a little vulgar in a way to become fastest and highest and largest and most impressive. I think that's with the complications of the world today, both politically and with the climate change, it's not in good taste anymore to have a big SUV.
Yeah. So what would you say is the most important task of architecture nowadays?
I think it's a very complicated task. I think there's with the way we work in the office, or the way we think in the office, is that everything is contextual, that you have to dig into the premises or the conditions of wherever you work, and in a way try to understand the very sometimes very complicated matters that is around a building, and go from there. I think it's a very sort of, it has to be complicated, of course. And if you talk about sustainability is not, there's not one answer every time you build. There's a different answers depending on where you are and where what the task is. And so I think that architects needs to be much more nuanced in their way of working, that you actually tap into the problems and the conditions of where you are, and then you take it from there, and then you have to take it very seriously all the way through. I mean, depending on where you are, one material or one way of one method of building could be the most sustainable way, but it could also be the least sustainable. So it's all depending on a lot of complicated matters, and you need to understand those, and you need to have the knowledge to take the right choices.
I was thinking about exporting architecture.
Yes.
When I was a student, architecture student, mm-hmm. I worked in an office in Cologne, and I was designing for a city in China, mm-hmm. but I've never been there. It was a big project, and yes. the only guy who went there was the project manager.
Yes.
So do you think this kind of export without thinking about or knowing anything yes. about the city far away is over?
I'm not sure that being there gives you the understanding of the place. Just to turn it around, that way of thinking is that I'm not sure that you need to be situated in the place to be able to design for the place, but you need to take the situation around the place very seriously, and you need to have the knowledge. You need to have big ears to understand what's going on. So in that sense, I think the iconic buildings, I mean, some architecture firms has been very successful in doing objects that is signature objects, and you know wherever they are in the world, you know that this is the office that did it, and to me that has always been a little bit stupid, to be honest. I think that's you cannot make an answer to a problem that you're not even trying to understand.
Some of them are so famous. The cities mm-hmm. need the landmarks, don't you think?
Well, I think cities needs landmarks, and they also need city fabric. There's a lot of layers of the city that needs to be there to make a good urban situation. And also the icons are important, but I think the icons needs to be part of the place. So I think, going to Venice or going to any of the other cities in the world that we love, which also has wonderful iconic buildings, I wouldn't miss out on that. And I think that icons are also important, but they need to have some kind of relationship. Otherwise, they look, foreign, or they feel foreign, they feel irrelevant.
Mm-hmm. Okay, let's come back to the space during the crisis, or the thinking about the space. Mm-hmm. Can we imagine new spaces now? Do you think we need new kind of spaces, like multifunctional buildings, like not using too much space for living here, working here, doing this there, but mm-hmm. just put it together maybe in mixed buildings,
yes.
and then mixed-use buildings, mm-hmm. and then we have more space for the, enjoyment or mm-hmm. for the...
Well, I think we need to understand that since the population of the world is escalating enormously, and I think that we need to understand that the quality of space is more important than the quantity, of course. So the making the cities much more compact is a need that we need to address. And I think that, you know, if you are in New York, you could go, you can go to a hairdresser at the third floor in some parts of the city. And I think that's, you know, trying to stack the city and the public, the things that are publicly addressed is a need that you need to, and then you need to understand how to do that. I think that it has very much to do with heightening the quality of each square meter. And I think right now we are in a experimental competition where we're combining some of the housing corporations with also with the socio-economic aspect and trying to make a community that is much more diverse, also a much more inclusive in a lot of ways, but not in a naive way. I think we need to, we cannot make these utopias and be naive about it. We need to be very hands-on. Another great problem beside the climate crisis is that there's a lot of exclusion, and I think especially in Northern Europe and in the wealthier communities, since the demand of competencies are getting higher and higher, it seems like we exclude more and more people also. I mean, people that are not educated and people that has special needs and so forth is in a way living in a parallel society. Even though you're not starving or you have a place to live, you're not part of society. And I think there's you need to address that inclusion in a way when we do our city, new parts of the cities, or if you work in the city fabric, how do you create places that are also inclusive to people that are not necessarily in the fast lane?
When we talk about public spaces, I think of the places outside, but maybe we have to open up the buildings to have more public spaces for everybody.
Yes, well, yeah. Yeah, I think the way you place a building, the way you work with a building, placing it in the city fabric, you need to address that. You know, what is public, and how can you create quality public space? The in between space between public and private is important for the sort of general comfort, I think, being in the city, that there are pockets and spaces that you are where you are invited in a way.
Yeah, some of your designs are more or less like building landscapes. Mm-hmm. They are not only usable from the inside, mm-hmm. and viewable from the outside, but they create a new landscape. They are accessible, mm-hmm. like the fifth facade, the roof. Mm-hmm. It's just usable for everybody. Do you think this is also a good model for the city? I mean, I've seen this in landscape.
Yes, it's mainly in the landscapes we've been doing it, and it has to be relevant, I think, because if people should move to the fifth floor, it really has to be attractive and it has to be natural to move up there. So sometimes it's not relevant to do it in the city. It has to be in some of the landscapes we've been working, like the whale. The site is a small peninsula, and since the program is so big, it's actually taking up the whole peninsula. So in that way, also taking away the view and the waterfront. So we thought it would be natural to create the roof as a public place for watching the sea and the sunset and the midnight sun and everything. So, and it's easy to access. I mean, but if it was a 10-floor buildings, I don't think it is really relevant to make the roofs public spaces. It has to be a natural part of the path in the city or in the public path. So if you have to take an elevator up there, it has to be a very dense city for you to do that. Otherwise, it's just a gimmick.
Yeah, that's true. But also, it's a nice gimmick. So yeah, it's the view over the city.
Yes, I mean, if it's there's one place here in Copenhagen, it's on the top of a parking building, and I think it's been used quite a lot. It's a sports area. And I think that is in use because you also have an activity up there and people use that. So sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. But you need to be careful to plan that it actually has enough attraction to, you know, to be a public space with enough people to be a public space also.
Yeah, I'm curious how it will develop because it's a big theme.
Yes.
Also in Berlin, I mean, that's a really a dense city. The density is yes. so big and people are coming and coming and yes. moving into Berlin. So we think about using the roofs, but not only private maybe. And so
it's interesting. And I think the main question is how do you make quality space that is inviting and friendly and public? And I think what you actually have in Berlin is an amazing amount of green. I think Berlin is the greenest city in Europe. And I think that alone is extremely liberating, that when you come to Berlin, you feel comfortable in the streets and in the public spaces because it's really very green. And I don't feel that Berlin seem that dense because all the small pockets or places has this kind of openness or invitation.
Yeah, that's true. It's not that dense. That's true. But we are worried because there are, I don't know how many thousand people move there every year, so there has to be a solution.
Yes.
And I was just thinking about the scale because you said it's the greenest city. That's mm-hmm. true. But sometimes you have to move very long way to get to the park.
Yes,
because
yes.
the streets are huge as well.
Yes.
And it's not livable in every corner.
No.
Not like Copenhagen. No, but no. Copenhagen, of course, is much smaller.
Yes.
You have only 630,000
Yes, in this small Copenhagen area. Yeah. I think you talk about larger Copenhagen. It's a bit bigger, but of course it's a small city. And you can almost go from one end to the other on a bike without straining yourself.
Yeah.
That's true.
Yeah, but, and in Berlin, you can do it. I know people who do it, but you really have to ride like for an hour
yes.
to get from the one yes. side to the other. So
yes.
we cannot do it. Can only small cities be livable or being designed and planned for a human scale?
Well, I think it's very much about neighborhoods, and I think it has to do with the quality of space in each neighborhood. I live in Nørrebro, which is a neighborhood in Copenhagen, and even that neighborhood is divided into different neighborhoods. And I think that's usually when I move around Copenhagen, and I think that counts for every city in the world, is that you would move from your home to your work to your friends, and it's actually in a quite small area. And of course, within that area that you live and work and visit your friends, there should be everything that's needed for a livable city. And I think that the green space is important. I think the balconies are important. I think there's a lot of the way the streets are designed is important. And I think the number of facilities, of course, restaurants and cafes and places where you can buy your food and so forth. All these things count for livability, but I don't think in this case size doesn't matter that much, because sometimes if you go to New York and you have to go to Central Park to actually get a green space, and it's an enormous and amazing space to have in a city, but you would much sometimes when you would much rather like that there's a small pocket park around the corner where you could sit, and I think that's in the small scale or in the smaller scale of the neighborhoods that it's important to create this livability.
Yesterday I went to the Danish Architecture Center
yes.
and there was a button and it was written, God is in the detail.
Yes.
So that's it. In the
yes.
end, yeah.
Yeah.
This is what I'm thinking out of the human scale,
yes.
what you're saying.
Yeah, and I think that we need to... to get back to that sort of experimental process that we're going through with the housing corporation about livability in the creating new neighborhoods, it's also about since space is expensive, we need to look at the how are the each housing unit designed, and how can we make them smaller without losing quality of space, and I think that counts for the city as well. That we need to look at how to get quality into the smallest corner, because I think that's much more important than the sort of iconic move in the city space. I mean, you don't have to have a grand park or a skateboard ramp or whatever. It seems like also the 2000 movement, if you could call it that, of the Dutch movement, it was all about activities. It was all about creating activities everywhere. And in a way, I think the daily life of people in the city is not so much about activities, it's actually about reflection or the possibility of reflection. So you don't need all that much. I mean, you don't need to be activated all the time. You can just sit down and relax, you know.
Yeah, and be together.
And yes, yes.
This is what was during the Corona time.
Yes.
We in our neighborhood, we just went out to a park, which was before the crisis. I thought, oh, I don't like it here so much, so I went somewhere else all the time.
Yes.
But now I spend there every day. We met there every day.
Yes.
So it was really wonderful. And I like it really nowadays.
And that's quite interesting that you have this restlessness, I think, you know, and that's what Corona has definitely, you know, positively done, is that you understand that your life is sometimes much better because it's really, you know, you don't have all these possibilities and you don't need to choose all the time. So there's a kind of space for reflection that is actually really nice and also makes the relationships that you have more important.
And also how we use the space we reflect about. And in Germany we think about the cars, mm-hmm. because they need 15% of the surface in the city. 15% is really too much.
Yes.
Or maybe more. I think it's even more. It's for the parking space and the streets.
Yes.
So I know many people who hope there will be a big change.
Yes, yes. And then that, of course, has to do with distances a lot. But I think, of course, public transport and the U-Bahn or metro or whatever you have in the city is important for you to be able to reach out within the city. But since your daily life usually is quite in quite small circles, the possibility for biking, or which takes, you know, much less space up. I mean, but we here in Copenhagen, of course, we always have problems with the bike parking. It's like, so you need to have, you know, 200 bike parking places here. It takes up a lot of space. It's kind of massive in a way. So But then, you know, if you imagine that it could have been cars instead, then it would have been horrible. But of course, also, I think we need to really understand also that the metro system and so forth is extremely important.
I said in the beginning that I would like to talk about the Copenhagen Vision 2025. Mm-hmm. So quality and coziness is not self-evident. The city of Copenhagen puts a lot of work in the quality.
Yes, yes.
And because quality is just not there, it has to be developed carefully. That makes Copenhagen a role model. Mm-hmm. And what I've seen on the website, it says we want to work with those who care about the city. We have three goals: a livable city with events, life and rooms for everyone, and the first carbon-free city. Well, mm-hmm. there are two goals anyway. But and we are a city with edges. We invite new projects which are not defined, mm-hmm. and temporary projects are welcome. We dare to dream bigger if things are temporary. And there's another quote: it gives a sense of ownership and pride when citizens get the chance to contribute, and citizens must become more than just demanding users. Mm-hmm. So I think Copenhagen is ahead again, because it's a really democratic way of urban development.
Yes.
What is the role of architects there?
Yeah, what is it? I mean, because I think this is, of course, a vision that is defined politically also and in the town hall and so forth. But I think there's also these more local political units around the neighborhoods that are independent. But the role of the architect in this realm is that, you know, this is the framework that we work under or within, and I think that everybody knows that the municipality will be quite demanding on what you will do for the public space. And of course it can be discussed what the municipality defines as good public space or not, and I think that's yeah, it's a difficult thing, because I don't think that there has been that much discussion among architects in this definition, of course, we can all tap in. Nobody says that we don't want to have a livable space. We don't want to have a carbon-free city. So in a way, the framework is so easy to tap into in one way. But I don't think that how do you then execute?
Yeah.
And I think that is a discussion that is probably not all that democratic. There's not a big discussion in the Architects Union, or there's no big discussion, you know, between architects in Copenhagen and the Copenhagen municipality. It's all kind of self-supportive in a way that, of course, everybody wants to have this livable city. And also it's almost not discussed how to do it. And I think that can be a little bit dangerous. And that is probably part of the Scandinavians' self-understanding, that, you know, humanism, democracy, all this, nobody, you know, can say, no, we don't want democracy, or we don't want humanism. But the discussion actually lacks, I think. It's a self-understanding that is... It's not very dynamic, you could say. It's not, you know, I would love if it was much more diversity in the opinions of what's good and bad, and what is good for the city and what's not, because everything is sort of self-implied.
And you have a city chief... No, chief city architect.
Yes, we do. We have a city architect, and... The role of the city architect in different cities is very different. Some of the cities, they don't actually have enough, they don't have very much real power. You know, in the 80s and 90s, the Berlin city architect was very, very powerful, as far as I understood, seen from the outside. And I think the Copenhagen city architect does have some power, but not they don't have full power, they don't have a department of working architects, you know, underneath. So it's kind of an independent role, and there's only so much you can do if you have this independent role without a department underneath you, right? But of course, the city architect has say in different issues, and also, so I think it's a very important role, but I would like it to have much more power.
And that's what I thought this vision is has been worked out with architects together.
Yes.
Or with the city.
Yes. Exactly. I think that the sometimes it can be, you know, you can read these, you know, we have these, the plan rule is pretty strict in Copenhagen, and what you would have is that there would be a plan for a local area, and there will be different goals and so forth, and they're very sort of detailed. And sometimes you think, you know, why has this not been discussed? Whether this is good or bad, or, you know, why is it not out for public debate in a much more sort of elaborated way? Seems like the debate on city questions is not, it's only on the surface, but it, you know, the real decisions are not in a public debate.
Yeah, so best would be to have this public debate, participation from the non-experts with the experts, the planners.
And also the architects needs to be much more active in this debate, because the architects of Copenhagen are, as I think there are in many cities, you know, just waiting for work. And so being part of that public debate can be a little bit dangerous, or, you know, you can rule yourself out maybe if you're too active. So I think it seems like architects are really passive in these debates.
Yeah, because they are afraid of not getting any more work.
Mm-hmm.
I think. Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's also kind of it's an understanding, I guess, also of colleagues, or that I guess if you go further back in time, architects would be really also part of the public debate on politics and how to create new societies, and it seems like architects are getting much more professional in one sense. So they are not taking, you know, they're not taking part in the public debate, because then they might have an opinion that can rule them out on something, and you don't want to be in a quarrel with colleagues, or so there's it's kind of a comfort thing too.
Yeah, and I think it weakens the whole group of architects.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I think if they want to be stronger, they have to be more political.
Yes, yeah. They have to be more political. They have to be much more outspoken. And but it's very difficult to have this. I guess it's also because it's all individual and everybody's competing with everybody, and so there's no feeling of being a group of people that could actually have power in shaping our cities and so forth. Yeah,
maybe that's still the problem with the iconic thinking.
Yes, you can say it's that is the iconic thinking is part of that thinking. I mean, right now we have one of the things that I've been involved in, and I'm still pretty surprised that we have this UNESCO heritage, but there's a heritage building from the 70s, a brutalist building, the Viking ship museum, and there's been some political trick, you could almost say, to delist this building, to get it torn down, to build a new museum. And the Chamber of Architects and I think also the community of architects has been surprisingly passive about this. And to be honest, that was to me really surprising. You cannot collect a big group of architects. I mean, of course, there's many people that are against this, are also speaking against it. But the whole feeling of the community standing, you know, saying, no, you can't do this. This is heritage. This is, you know, an important building. The main group of architects has been pretty passive about this. And maybe because they don't care, I don't know. Or maybe because they're, you know, waiting for a competition for them to attend. I don't know. So I think that's pretty, to me that was very surprising that you cannot even, you know, there was no feeling of strength in the architecture community fighting against this building. But because it didn't have to do with their people's sort of personal office life, it was like, so, you know, who cares? Yeah.
So they have to be economically safe, the architects,
yes,
as well.
Yes, yes.
I mean, when I was studying, I learned the bigger the house, the more I earn.
Yes, so that's, yes, yes.
Of course, yeah. I need to earn money.
Yeah.
So maybe there's another thing we have to change so architects,
yes,
can be free.
Yeah, yeah. Of course, there's a... It's also difficult times, I guess, in a lot of ways. But it's also architecture is becoming more commercial. It's much bigger business, and I mean, at least here in Denmark, the offices are getting bigger. It's in some ways more professional, but also more commercial, and that means that you're not all that independent anymore. I mean, you need to keep up business.
I've got a quote from a German architect, Volker Stab. Mm-hmm. He said, the role of architects to look at the entire work and not only at the facade is endangered.
Yes.
So he's saying
I think that's very interesting. I think that's an interesting quote, because I think that the as far as I interpret that quote, it's also about the real sort of serious discussion about architecture. It seems to be very superficial and very sort of non-existing in a lot of ways. I mean, also I guess because architecture is almost like it's becoming a matter of taste or of movement, that it's becoming very difficult to discuss the meaningfulness, I think, of architecture, and I think that the relevance, I guess. Maybe there's a new, let's hope. There's a new discussion on its way, where you insist on also discussing. I think meaningfulness is an important word in a way, because the discussion of resources and what do you use your resources for? Is this necessary? I mean, it has to have a necessity in a way, and it's not just now I'm changing the subject in a way, but when we did the Mies van der Rohe last time, I was head of the jury, and the discussion was very much on necessity. And since, of course, you could evaluate architecture on being beautiful objects or appealing aesthetically, which is, of course, architecture has to be appealing aesthetically, and that has to be coherent in a lot of ways. But that's not it's not enough to evaluate 10 beautiful projects against each other to say which is most beautiful, and it has to have much more necessity, and it seemed to be a very uniform opinion in the jury that your necessity was a key word.
So maybe we have to rethink competitions.
Yes, well. Yes, maybe. I think the competitions are... well, we do a lot of competitions. Last year we did 15 competitions, and sometimes it's very difficult to find your way in the importance of, you know, what is the most important thing here? What is the importance of this building? Not only for the user or for the client, but also for the city, because it's not really well defined. Seems like also clients are searching for importance.
Yeah. And I think also the public is really more interested. The TV sender Arte is showing a lot of architecture documentaries. Mm-hmm. I think there was one about you as well.
Really? Okay.
Yeah, I think no. So. And on Arte.
Yeah.
A documentation.
Oh, okay, yes. Yeah.
Yeah. And now there's one about building... building the city new, like the dense city,
yes,
and using the roofs, like 6 parts of documentation.
Uh-huh.
Maybe this is good for architecture and for architects, that this is that it becomes more relevant for even for the non-experts.
Yes, I think that's it. Because I think the Dutch wave, in a way, what they did positively was to make the public interested. Suddenly the public could tap into architecture saying, okay, this is fun, or I like this building because I can relate to it, or it's a fun joke, or it's doing something for my, you know, for my daily life. So this kind of popular part of the Dutch movement, I think, was putting architecture on a possible dialogue between non-architects. On the other hand, it also made it very simple. That, you know, and that's part of the balance, I think. You know, how simple should architecture be to be able to communicate to the public, and how complicated can you? And architecture is complicated, you know. So if you want to have architecture of I think of quality, there needs to be some level of complication. Or complex issues. On the other hand, to communicate that to non-architects is a difficult task. So, on one hand, the Dutch way was opening up, making architecture interesting again somehow for the public. On the other hand, it was also making it much less nuanced. So maybe we should get, you know, back to a little more nuance, but also remember to keep the public in the discussion. Yeah.
What is your personal wish, how the position of architects changes, maybe through this crisis or whatever? What is your dream, how architects can act?
Well, I do hope that the relevance of place will be more important, and I think and be part of the discussion. I think the relevance of architecture in place, in context, will be part of the discussion. And I also hope that the community, the discussion of seclusion and inclusion in the cities will be something that planners and urbanists are discussing, because I think it is very much part of the economic framework in a city. It doesn't have to do with aesthetics or with creating skateboard ramps or activities, or but it has to do with basic economy. I think that when you are planning in a neighborhood, you also have to plan with very different levels of economy, that you have the possibility with a small economy to be part of a city structure or neighborhood structure. Because right now, I think that what is happening is that you are creating livable cities. I mean, at least here in Copenhagen, you're creating livable new neighborhoods, but without thinking of the whole underlying structure of different social levels and different economies and different... So it becomes, in a way, a Tivoli. It becomes a city for a certain resourceful group of people, and I think that's not a rich city has, you know, the most nuanced underlying social structure. So I think that's Was that too complicated?
No, it was. It's a complex theme, and I find it very interesting that this is so important to you, and I think this is really good because I think the architecture and the architects mm-hmm. will become more relevant mm-hmm. if they think wider
yes.
about social constructions yes. in the city.
Yeah. And to me, I mean, I'm also a very. It's not that I'm not interested in aesthetics or not interested in sort of pure architectural value. I think it is extremely important. But what I see now is that there are architects that are purely working with, you know, climate change and sustainability and social sustainability on one hand, and then there are architects purely working with the sort of aesthetics and the iconic quality of architecture. And I think that, you know, we need to merge both and you know, to take the social structure seriously, but it's not an excuse for making bad architecture, and like sustainability is not an excuse for making bad architecture. I think that it's a much more complicated world, and architects need to gain the knowledge they need to be able to act in this complicated world. Otherwise, it will become like what Gustav says, you know, it's just a matter of facade. And, you know, if they want to keep relevance, they need to step up, in a way, in knowledge and also in political knowledge and try to influence in the way the society is moving.
So what do you recommend? This is the last question. What do you recommend to young architects who just come into this profession, come to the market? How can they stand up, be strong, and... Yeah. How can they change?
Well, you could say that young architects, and I think also young people altogether right now is quite, there's a lot of positive things going on. It seems like young people today are they're actually acting, and they're not stepping into the structures of society that we have created. They insist on being on in their own kind of movement, and I think that is very strong. So I think, you know, you can create a lot of things together. So instead of, you know, tapping into the constructions that we have created, I think they should, they have the power now. I think also they have the collective power to be able to do something by themselves. And I think they could be the new movement, the new positive movement. And I think that's important that they understand that they have this power. I think what you've been seeing with Me Too movement and with the climate change, and everything is. It seems like there's a lot of power out there, and also a lot of will of change. And I think that this kind of independence as a younger generation, they should definitely use that for something important.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.